Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
This program was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com.
You're back with Bell and Sperling.
You certainly are.
Just before we go to our guest, John, I asked you, what have you cheated at in sport?
Yeah.
Okay. And this follows on from Ben Stokes saying he doesn't trust the Aussies after the ball tampering situation. I don't want you to tell me yet, okay? I won't tell you mine because my one's quite funny.
Is it?
Yeah. And I know a few of our mates will be listening, and
and they'll be able to confirm it. Right?
Well, yeah, maybe. Maybe one of them, but they've cheated themselves, so okay. I don't really care. Yeah. Listen, John, Salomon Rondon is reported to be earning £8 million per year in China after linking up with ex-boss Rafa Benitez. He says he hoped to stay at the club where he was number nine and loved by the fans, which is a real shame, I think, that he's had to go. David Coverdale interviewed Rondon for The Sun, and he joins us now. Morning, David.
Morning, all.
Good morning to you, David.
This is a real sad one. It's a real sad one. You know, why clubs are losing their players, it's just a real sad situation, I think. Obviously, to China as well. We're not really going to see him. In the piece that you interviewed him with, he says he left for the Copa America thinking that Rafa would sign a new deal. But with Rafa, went his chances of staying. Do you think that's the case for Perez too?
I think that will have had a big say in Perez leaving. So the difference is Leicester triggered his release clause of £30 million. So whether Newcastle could have kept hold of Perez anyway, I'm not so sure. But I think Perez would have wanted to stay more if Rafa was there as well. They had a great bond. Rafa loved Perez as a player. I know Perez loved Rafa as a manager. And it was the same with Rondon. And Perez and Rondon together last season were brilliant for Newcastle. They were largely the reason they stayed up as comfortably as they did in the end. And Newcastle have lost all those goals this season. So that's, I think, 23 Premier League goals together that they're missing. So I know they've made a £40 million signing in Joe Linton, the Brazilian striker, but he's going to have to do a lot of work to get the goals that they're missing.
Absolutely. He's been quite honest about the money in China, but did you get the impression that he really wanted to stay at Newcastle?
I did, yeah. I do think he loved his time last season. He'd had 3 years at West Brom where he'd done okay, but he hadn't set the world on fire. And he came to Newcastle, the number nine. We all know how, you know, the fans get behind a number nine if they're doing well.
Yeah.
And he was absolutely loved up there. And he had such a good season that I'd say he played some of the best football he's played in his career. And I think he would have ideally kept going at Newcastle. And I know that's easy for him to say, and people will argue, well, he just wanted the money in China. But I really do think his preference was to stay in the Premier League. And after Newcastle didn't go for him, he was waiting for West Ham. He's worked with Manuel Pellegrini before in his career. And I think that would have been his next choice. I think Wolves were linked with him at one point as well. But I think in the end, the clubs he was hoping would come in for him didn't. The offer there from Rafa in China was there. And he thought, well, why not? I may as well go and cash in.
Yeah, I mean, listen, we would have loved him at West Ham because I think he is a right handful It would have been great there.
He's an handful.
He is an handful, as Ray Winston would have called
him.
He made comments about his age. I mean, he's only 29. He's certainly got several years left at the top. Does that sort of show that Mike Ashley, you know, he's got a lack of football knowledge that, you know, he's considered Rondon too old?
Yeah, now this is a big issue at Newcastle and has been for a number of years. They did not want to sign Rondon last summer on a permanent deal, which is why they got him on loan. Rafa really wanted to get him on a permanent, but Newcastle thought, and then he was 28, but their policy is we're not going to pay big money and big wages for players who are approaching 30. And I think that's a flawed policy at times. 16.5 million for Rondon, a proven goal scorer,
yeah,
I think is good money in the current market. But the way Newcastle look at it is they won't be able to sell him on for bigger money. But it's really short-term thinking, in my opinion. You could argue it's long-term thinking because they want to get young players in and sell them on. Newcastle needed a proven goal scorer.
Yeah.
And I think the money that they would have had to pay to get him compared to the money that they will lose if they're relegated, I think you look at it that way. And I think he would have been good business at 16.5 million.
Yeah, I mean, it's very... Why do you think they didn't keep Rafa? Why didn't they do everything they could to keep him? I mean, he was proven... The fans loved him,
yeah,
and they let him go.
Well, you read Mike Ashley's interview at the weekend, which was explosive, wasn't it? He suggested Rafa left for China for the money, and there was nothing we could have done to keep him. He always wanted more. Mm. But I don't think that is quite the case. I think Rafa would have stayed if he was felt wanted and he felt like Newcastle would have kept to their... kept their word about signings. He'd been there 3 years. He wasn't given much money to spend. He wasn't given the targets that he wanted. Newcastle were trying to force players on him, like Joe Linton, for example. They were trying to sign in January, but Rafa didn't want him. He didn't rate him. So Rafa just didn't feel like he could trust them. So Newcastle say they did all they could, but really all they had to do was show him and prove to him that we'll get a couple of new players in. Now, he wanted upgrades on the training ground, which Ashley's saying he would have done, but there's no proof of that. So Rafa just didn't trust him in the end.
I know Mike Ashley did another interview with another paper, and he confirmed in the interview that he's received no takeover bid so far. And I'm just wondering, you know, is it that he doesn't actually want to sell the club? Does he just want to keep it? Because it's such a great promotion for his business, isn't it?
Well, that's what all Newcastle fans fear. That's definitely the conspiracy on Tyneside. I believe that if he was given an offer that he thought was good business for me, he would accept it. But because he doesn't need to sell, because he, like you said, it is good publicity for his business, he's not just going to accept any old offer, where some owners are just desperate to get out and will probably take a lesser offer. Mike actually values the club at what he does. He won't take anything less than that. He's not desperate to sell. So, yeah, I think it's a bit of both. I think if he's given a top offer, he would take it if it's good business, but equally he doesn't need to sell.
Yeah, I find it mad, the situation they're in. But, you know, I do know, I mean, Steve Bruce has come out and said that he's been up to the training ground. Mike Ashley's been at the training ground, which he hasn't done for a couple of years. Mm. So does that show a bit of a start that he may be taking this little football club that he owns seriously?
Yeah, Mike, his helicopter landed at the training ground last Wednesday, just as we were arriving for the press conference with Steve Bruce and the new signing, Joe Linton. Mike's helicopter was just flying away. And that was very rare. He hasn't been at the training ground. I think maybe he went there once under Rafa.
Yeah.
And Rafa only met him throughout his 3 years, about five times.
Wow.
Which is unsustainable for a manager and an owner. You think you need a stronger relationship than that.
Yeah.
So it looks like, to me, Steve Bruce is making a concerted effort to get on better with Mike.
What about you just mentioned Joe Linton. I mean, you know, is he a decent replacement for what they're losing?
I've heard mixed reports. I think he played well last night at Hibernian in a friendly. He scored one and set up another.
To be fair, I think I could play well at Hibernian. Let's be honest.
But they
need some other players, don't they, surely?
They are desperate for players because they're pinning so much on Joe Linton, and he's unproven in the Premier League. He only scored in the Bundesliga last year, so he is their only. Well, Gale and Muto, but really they don't see those as, you know, first choice.
We're breaking up a little bit there.
We're breaking up.
Do you know what? I just wanted to ask you. I don't know if the line's clear. We just try it. If you can just move about a little bit.
Yeah.
I just wanted to ask you lastly about Steve Bruce, because even though he's a Newcastle fan, you know, we thought he was probably best of a bad bunch, if you like, that he's going to go there. But the fans have really not taken to him. There's been a bit of uproar in it, isn't there?
Have the fans started to warm to him a little bit?
I don't think so.
No.
We'll see on the Saturday a bit better, because they've got their first friendly at St James's, and then they've got their home game against Arsenal next Sunday, which some fans are planning to boycott. So,
do you think that'll happen? Do you think that they will boycott? I mean, it will be very strange for Newcastle fans to do this, because they live and breathe football. I've said, even if it's minus 10 and it's snowing, they still go there without a shirt, obviously. But, you know, they live and breathe football. And a pit bull. But why would they, you know, would they really take a chance and boycott this?
It's going to be a really interesting one. There've been calls for boycotts at previous games in recent seasons, and they've been a damp squib. Nothing's really happened. I do think this Arsenal one, you might see maybe 5,000 stay away. I still think there's going to be 40,000 plus there. But even if it's 5,000 to 10,000, that will be noticeable. I know some fans who have never missed a game are planning to miss this game. So I think there will be a few, but there'll still be a decent crowd.
Okay. It all depends on results. If he starts winning, they'll like him.
They'll start coming back.
They'll start liking him.
Yeah, okay.
That's exactly right.
Fair shout. It's a fair shout.
If he gets off to a good start, then I think a lot of the dissent will go away.
Yeah.
Before you go, David, I was going to say, I've got two questions actually for you. Anybody that you think that they should sign that would fit into a Newcastle setup?
They need a strike. Andy Carroll's been linked, but if you could promise a fit Andy Carroll, which is almost impossible to do, then that could work really well.
Well, strangely enough, Andy Carroll was at our gig on Friday night. We did a gig Friday night, and Andy was there. And I had a chat with him about that, strangely enough. And he did say that there was a bit of a rumour about Newcastle. And at the moment, whether it was going to happen or not, at the moment he's training with a West Ham team, and I think he's reasonably fit. So, you know, there's no risk. And I've always said that someone like Andy Carroll is another tool in your bag, isn't he? He offers something completely different. I mean, you know, at the end of the night, us two were standing with him, and he is about 11 foot nine. It's ridiculous. I actually asked him to get see if he could see if there was any balls on the roof. But it's just, you know, he offers something different. Even if he's, you know, you bring him on for the last 20 minutes.
But the other trouble is, he's just moved into Epping.
He's moved into Rod Stewart's house.
So you might not want to come up there for that reason.
Yes. Yeah.
But he's got a football pitch in his garden.
But you know what? He could land a helicopter. He can land a helicopter and fly up there for training.
Let me tell you something. All the money in the world I could have, you wouldn't get me up in one of those.
No, you're right. You're right. Just lastly, before you go, David, have you ever cheated at sport?
It's a good one. I'd say when I've played cricket, I've nicked one behind and not walked.
There you go.
Wow.
That's what I'm talking about.
Here we are.
Is that cheating?
Yeah. Well, it is. It's not as bad as the Aussies tampering with the ball, but we'll let that one go. David, it's been wonderful having you on.
Cheers, David.
And fascinating subject with everybody running off to China.
Have a good day, David.
Yeah, have a good one.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Cheers, wonderful. Mate.
David Coverdale there, Northern sports reporter for The Sun. When we do come back, Johnny Sperling is going to figure out what he's cheated at.
Giving your team a voice. Love Sport Radio.
When I say cheating, I don't mean cheating at anything. I'm talking about cheating at sport.
Right.
All right, okay.
Yeah, I know what you mean, but I didn't play much sport, did I?
No.
I can't think of anything
I've cheated at. You must have cheated at snooker. Table tennis. I saw you cheat at table tennis once.
How can you cheat at table tennis?
You did. You said, look over there, and then you smashed the ball. I've seen you. I've seen you do it.
No.
Listen, just send us a WhatsApp on that number, 0208 70 558. Tell us the funniest cheating experience you've had in sport. Listen, John, we covered this quite a bit last year when we was, or a few months back when we were doing Drive. The racism in football, and we've said this a few times. I mean, it's always happened, but there's racism at Chelsea.
That seems to be the worst one, doesn't it?
Well, listen.
One of the worst.
They're about everywhere.
Of course they are.
But we remember the situation on the train and stuff.
Yeah, the train, yeah.
Okay, there's a fan has now been banned.
For life.
At Stamford Bridge for life. Okay. Maybe that's what it takes. Well, joined now by Nisar Kinsella, global Chelsea correspondent. Nisar, welcome. How are you?
Hi, guys.
Yeah, I know you've been on before, and I don't think we chatted about this before, Nisar, but just tell us about what's happened. It's a ban for life, this one, isn't it?
Yeah, well, one fan has been banned for life. Six fans have been charged. The others have sort of a ban for an indefinite period, which will eventually be, you know, lifted. But one fan's definitely banned for life, and that's an interesting thing, because Chelsea have been talking about a zero tolerance on racism. That's what they kept saying last season. They were kind of going up against their own fans trying to control this. And it sends out a clear message at the beginning of the season, you know, in a high-profile case as well, that they really do have a zero tolerance on racism at Stamford Bridge. And they, you know, they used two lip readers. They took it very seriously. They did their own investigation. Yeah, they did their own investigation and concluded that he's contravened the terms of the ticketing policy at the club, and that's a no racism policy, and they've banned a man for life.
Mm. I mean, why? Not being funny, I know that it happens across quite a few clubs, but Chelsea have got a particularly bad reputation for this, haven't they?
Yeah, it harks back to, you know, the 80s, and it's a historical thing, and people are trying to bring it back. There's several reasons, you know. Chelsea exists within a political landscape. So, you know, racism is on the rise across the UK, unfortunately. You know, for those who haven't lived in a bubble, they can probably see that. We're a divided country. There's many, you know, Brexit might have been part of that as well. There's a lot going on in the country that sort of football exists within. And, you know, there's been incidents at other clubs as well. Chelsea fans get very frustrated to be sort of the target of this kind of coverage. But they had several incidents last season, and you know, most of them related to the chants against Tottenham, the anti-Semitic chanting. But this incident was a bit different in that it was against Raheem Sterling. It was against a black player. So, you know, I think that's sort of why Chelsea are always in the headlines on this. Then, you know, there's a national front link from the 80s, and people are trying to bring that back. A very small but vocal group of Chelsea fans in the stadium are trying to bring that back. And the place where you hear it particularly bad is on away European trips. So, there's an element of dread when I travel to these beautiful places like Istanbul, like last season Malmo and Prague and things like that, because you're half expecting to hear the anti-Semitic Yid word used. And,
yes.
That's something that's a bit of a distraction from the football.
But the funny thing is about that, I'm a Tottenham fan, Nizar, and the funny thing is about that, and I can only speak for my the group of friends that I know that are Tottenham fans, and they are Jewish. They love it. They love that.
Yeah, but
honestly, they do.
Does it make it right, though?
It doesn't make it right.
But they're not offended. What you're saying is
they're definitely not offended.
You're
by
half
it.
Jewish.
I am.
Does it make
the better half?
Okay. Yeah. Does it sort of?
No.
Okay.
No, absolutely not.
Right.
But because this is they'll be singing it with them.
Yeah, but this is different.
Well, it's different. Of course, it is.
The situation with Raheem Sterling as well.
No. That's completely different.
And I mean, listen, Nizar.
Is it the culture though? That's what I want to ask Nizar.
Well, do you know what? Like he just said, it goes back to the '80s, and I think it was more prevalent in the '80s. And I just don't know why there's a resurgence of it now. Why is that happening, Nizar?
It's always been there, Nizar, hasn't it?
Well, I think people have been scared to, you know, there's always been racist in football stadiums, but I think they've been empowered a little bit across the country because of, you know, the Brexit movement, some of the rhetoric in our media. You know, there's lots of reasons. I think that, you know, gradually we're becoming a more racist society, and if we're not, we've got to kind of fight for the society that we want. There's people like Tommy Robinson becoming vocal figures. You've got to say the use of social media as well, allowing these groups to come together and use this kind of language online, and I think eventually it also spills into the real world. So there's various reasons why, you know, people are feeling empowered, and football is going to be the place where they speak it out, because football is a place where you say the most horrible thing you can against a footballer.
It's a culture, isn't it? It's a culture that are we going to be able to change it?
But wait! I said, Nizar, last year I was at the West Ham Chelsea game at West Ham Stadium. And this is not a racist chant at all, but it was Willian came over to take a corner, and the amount of fans that run down, let's say, a few steps to get into the corner to shout abuse at him, like literally sort of 5-6 feet away from him. I actually, at the time, didn't think it was racial abuse. I didn't hear racial abuse. But just the actual abuse, and I'm standing with my son, I just thought, it's embarrassing. I mean, surely, you know, if people are standing out, you know, you go to a football match now, it's quite a family affair, isn't it? Yeah. You know, you take the kids and stuff. And I would be embarrassed if I was shouting that. So surely you've got to look around you and think, hang on a minute, people are just looking at me like I'm an imbecile.
Yeah, I think the fans need to police it themselves as well and try to sort of manage it and make the club what they want their club to be. That's the way I would do it. You know, with the sort of yid chanting at Chelsea, I know that Spurs fans do it as well. And that's actually been, you know, the Jewish community have actually come out and said that's wrong. So it's kind of up to those groups as well to decide what's right and what's wrong. You know, I know it's something that we've done for years and years. And maybe people don't mean these things in a racist way. And I'm sure a lot of Chelsea fans don't actually mean it in a racist way, using the yid word. But
They call it the Yid Army, don't they? And all my friends see. They did. I don't know if they do anymore.
Well, you do still hear it. No, yeah.
Of course you do. Frank Lampard's criticised a fan song about him at the weekend. I mean, how important is it that he spoke out?
I think that's one of the most important things that's happened so far in Chelsea trying to quash this language, because people listen to Frank Lampard. They're not going to listen to the club spokesman. They're not going to listen to journalists like me coming on the radio. But when Frank Lampard speaks, people do listen at Chelsea. And, you know, he is the main man. They will be deferential to him. And, you know the attitude of these people. They don't like to be told what to do by anybody. But there's one or two maybe figures that they will listen to. And Frank Lampard is one of them. I think that it's great as well, especially at the start of the season, just to sort of send a clear message. You know, there's a Lampard chant. This one's actually against the Gypsy community and the Traveller community, this chant that they use, calling West Ham fans pikeys. It's kind of, you know, it's getting rid of that chant, making sure they, you know, maybe replace that word or sing a different chant. So, Frank Lampard and other players don't want to be associated with this kind of language. You know, they don't want anything that's even a grey area in terms of racism being associated with them. So it's understandable, really. And Frank Lampard hopes to be there for many years, so I don't think he wants
he's trying to set an example, obviously. Just what about Raheem Sterling? He's been praised for speaking out. Do you think players like him are making a difference?
Yeah, definitely. I think Raheem Sterling made more of a difference than a lot of our politicians. I think he was brave enough to say something that that's been bubbling under for a while. You know, he's taken on a whole political system, a political context, language we use. And I think that's really important. I think that as a society, we need to think about how we portray black people in the media, how we portray each different race, and not just fall into lazy, stereotypical traps because, you know, Raheem Sterling's post went into some detail, which is something that I actually believe that is correct. You know, somebody who works in the media, you know, the portrayal of a black man who earns a lot of money is sometimes seen as flashy, and then a white guy can be seen as, you know, helping his family and things like that. And he wasn't having a go. It was Phil Foden and another youngster, a defender at Man City, who he used some coverage that he saw about them. And players notice these things and feel hard done by. And I think that, you know, the language we use is very powerful. We need to be a little bit careful.
Yeah.
As journalists, how we cover, you know, race issues in football.
Well, hopefully they're making a start at Chelsea, setting an example.
Yeah.
Nizar, as always, thanks ever so much for your time. Nizar Kinsella there, goal Chelsea correspondent.
Thanks, Nizar. Thank you.
There's one thing I just want to add to this, John.
Yeah.
If it's abuse from the fans towards players in certain aspects, okay, that's always been there and it's always going to be there. Not racist. I'm talking, take the racist situation out of it. If you're shouting abuse at a player or you're singing a song about a certain player, you know, a good friend of ours was telling me the other week that he used to get abuse from fans saying, take that fridge off your back. Get that fridge off your back, because he was quite a slow runner, right? Okay. And the funny part about this, that was from his own fans. You know?
Yeah, but that's not really...
But it's not.
Is it?
As part of the being in the stand...
That's a bit different. That's just
different.
Banter.
It's banter, isn't it? Yeah. Okay. And surely we're not gonna take that out of the
stand.
See,
this is
because that's part of what we've grown up with.
This is what I'm worried about. In all walks of life,
how far
in fact,
is it going to go? Yeah.
In all walks of life, it's like children, for example, at schools, right? Mm. Now you can't say "come on, girls" anymore,
right? Okay.
Come on, so and so, whatever. You can't say "come on." I don't know. It's getting so stupid.
Yeah. Okay.
And you can't say, "Oh, you know, you're going to win the race. You're going to compete in the race." Shut up.
Okay.
I want you to win the race. Get out there and try and win it.
Otherwise, you're not coming home.
But what's namby-pamby going
on? You're no son of mine.
But it's true, isn't it?
I agree. And that's what I'm saying. I think that the banter between fans and players has still got to be there. Because I remember some songs... Some of the songs that have been sung about some of the players. I remember certain players, I'm not going to mention names, looking up at the crowd and laughing. Because it's a bit of banter. That's what we've always... Take the racism out of it. That's a gimme.
Absolutely.
But you still got
the songs were great though.
Well,
some of the songs.
You know, we ended up, didn't we? We did a TV show where we had to judge some of the songs that were written by fans in the stands.
That's right.
And we did it with Chris Moyles.
Yes.
And it was for Football Focus.
Yes, it was.
And it was really good. Some of the songs that some of the fans wrote.
The poet. It was
Andrew Motion.
Andrew Motion.
Who was the poet laureate. For the Queen.
Do you know something? I sat with Andrew Motion.
Yes.
You left me. We went to the thing to do it. And you left me in the room with him.
Yeah.
For 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, that's a pair.
That was unusual for
He's
me.
The Queen's poet laureate. And Johnny Sperling. Who wrote the Sven-Göran Eriksson song? Sitting together, having a serious conversation. What was you talking about? Do you know? What do you think?
No, I have not got a clue.
Yeah, okay. Look, we'll have a little think about it when we come back. I still want to find out what you were cheating about.
From Ali to Zaha, we've got it covered. Love Sport Radio.
I didn't realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a backseat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills, so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Right, listen, John, yes. We've been talking about Andy Murray for quite a bit of the leading up to the summer.
Yeah.
And he sort of made a resurgence. We're talking about his hip replacement.
He retired, and then he bounced back.
Yeah, and it was a false retirement. Everyone gave him a nice sob story video, and then he said, hang on a minute, I don't know what they're doing this for.
I want my clock back. Give me my clock back, Andy.
Coming back. And it was quite nice that he played with Serena Williams. There was so much interest at Wimbledon with
him. Until they lost.
And it looks like he may be playing singles again. We're joined by a friend of the show, Uche Amarco, tennis writer for The Express. How are you, Uche?
Uche!
Morning, gents. How are you? I'm good.
Very good. Lovely. Thank you, Uche.
Before we start, Uche, we're just mentioning about Ben Stokes. He said that he doesn't trust the Aussies because they were doing the old ball tampering. Have you ever cheated at sport? Have you cheated at tennis? Come on, tell us.
Admit it.
I've done a few dodgy line calls. I'll give you that.
That's only a few dodgy line calls.
That's what we're talking about.
It's all about intimidating your opponent, giving them the eye and making them doubt themselves.
That's very true, very true. Now, can he come back in August? I mean, can he be a contender, as Marlon Brando once said?
Hopefully, he's saying all the right things. He sounds confident.
He's pain free, isn't he? He's pain free.
He's still pain free. He's playing a lot more singles matches now. We'll have to see how he does again in the doubles this week. But hopefully, he'll give it a try. But I do think he shouldn't rush it. He should still stay patient, keep doing what he's doing, and if he doesn't work out for the US Open.
Yeah, I was going to ask. No, I was going to say, do you think he's planning to do the US Open?
I don't think he will. I think he will. He'll just have patience. His backroom staff, his family will need to sort of calm him down and say, look, there's no need to rush it. Keep practicing, keep playing, and then by 2020, Australian Open, he should be absolutely fine to go ahead with it.
Mm. I mean, did that sort of give him a bit of confidence playing with Serena as well? Just getting him back into a decent... Yeah, I know it was doubles, but sort of getting back in front of everybody.
Yeah, and I think seeing the reaction to him coming back and just being pain-free for the first time in his life in a long, long time, that has given him the encouragement and inspiration to think, OK, let's try this again. And I think it's good. It's good to have him back. I mean, obviously, it was a bit farcical earlier in the year, but having him back is good for British tennis.
It was a nice way to ease his way back into it, wasn't it? The doubles.
And the fact that people liked him again.
Yeah.
What about his... Now, he's teamed up with his brother, isn't he? In the doubles.
He's with his brother this week in the doubles for the first time in a while. So that'd be interesting to see those two go ahead. They've got a tough game. First round match, but if they can come through that, who knows?
Do you think privately they've played an awful lot together?
They played together in Davis Cup for Great Britain, so they'll be well versed with each other. They would have warmed up with each other. There'll be no secrets between them in terms of their style of play. I mean, there's probably that sort of brotherly connection as well. You know what he's going to do.
I wonder when they go home, you know, for like a family dinner.
Yeah.
Well, he says, Andy, you fancy a little game? And they go outside, you know, it's a great big tournament there.
It's like in the back garden.
Your dinner's ready.
Yeah, he's.
Yeah.
And his mum.
No, mum, I've got to know them. Just what I want to do, I'm going to do him. Do you know what I mean? Is it like that?
I bet there was a nightmare family holiday with that crowd, wasn't it? How competitive that would have been.
But it will be lovely for their family to see them play together as well. Their mum and then Nan and whatnot.
Yeah, without a doubt. Listen, to Zverev. I can't say his name because I just get the V. It just comes out. Every time, because it's got two Vs in it, it just comes out strange. But he's recently split up with Ivan Lendl, hasn't he? What happened there? Was that a bit soon?
No, it was a surprise relationship to begin with, and Zverev did brilliantly to win the ATP Masters in November, and we thought, okay, this was a big turning point in his career. He's going to kick on this year, but it just hasn't happened. We all know that Lendl is very fond of playing golf and all the other extracurricular activities.
Really?
Yeah, he's a big golf fan. And plays quite a lot, pretty well, I'm told.
Yeah.
So he's just not been able to dedicate enough time to Alexander, who has been struggling massively this year. He's really not lived up to what was expected of him. The game needs him to be challenging the likes of Federer, Nadal and Djokovic, and he just hasn't been up to it this year. So it's no surprise that they split. It's been far from harmonious between them.
Yeah, I mean, he lost in the semi-final of the German Open. Is the hard court season now an opportunity for him to regain a bit of confidence?
Yeah, it needs to happen. I mean, he crashed out in the first round at Wimbledon. Surprisingly, he decided to play on clay last week. I think you're better off getting back onto the hard court and getting accustomed to it again. But he'll be there in Canada next week for the Rogers Cup. So he needs to go deep in the tournament just to boost, give himself a confidence boost leading into the US Open. Yeah.
Yeah. And listen, we were talking about Nick Kyrgios quite a bit.
We like Kyrgios.
There's something about him we like. You know, it's the John McEnroe. I know he hasn't got the talent of John McEnroe, or we haven't seen it yet, but he's just controversial, and I like sort of hearing about him. But he teamed up with Tsitsipas, didn't he? But didn't quite work out.
No, it didn't quite work out, unfortunately, for the two of them. But it was an entertaining match. They were playing against the top seeds of the tournament, and the two lads that won Wimbledon recently. So it was always going to be a tough task for them. But they equipped themselves well. Coming into the match, there was a bit of a history between them. They've said a few things about each other, but you wouldn't have known that by the way that they're rapport and they were bouncing off each other and really working together and having fun. And that seems to be what Nick Kyrgios is all about. He wants to have fun, but at some point the penny needs to drop. And
I was going to say that, Uche, is, for want of a better word, is he any good?
Yeah, he's wildly talented. He's got so much talent, but he just doesn't apply himself. He doesn't train enough. He doesn't have the dedication. He just wants to have fun. And when on the court, the minute he doesn't go his own way or he's not having fun, that's when he kicks off, and that's when the bad attitude comes out. But yeah. Off the court, he's a good lad.
Is he?
He loves working with kids and practicing with them. He's great value in press conferences. But at the end of the day, sport is all about winning.
Yeah,
yeah, of course it is. Yeah, we were saying before how people are being, how the kids are being brought up now to say no, you're not going to win it. You're going to compete.
Yeah, yeah.
What a load of rubbish it all is, isn't it? sorry, mate. Carl Edmund is through to the third round in Washington. How's he playing? Yeah. How's he playing at the moment?
Yeah, he won overnight. He had a tough year as a whole. Really, obviously, he lost early in Wimbledon as well. But the hard court is his favourite surface, and that's where his best results have come. So, hopefully, leading into the US Open, he's another one that needs to build a bit of confidence, because his game's ideally suited for the hardcore. He's got a massive serve, big forehand, he's athletic. He just needs to build confidence. There's a lot of players currently who are low on confidence and aren't performing to their capabilities. So it's going to be an interesting couple of tournaments.
Now, Corey Goff obviously was the big buzzword at Wimbledon, and it was fantastic watching her. I mean, she's only about 11. It's ridiculous. And she's sort of got into the main draw at Washington. Do you think that she's going to make another splash at her home in the US Open later this year?
She could do. It's entirely possible. Unfortunately, she lost last night in the first round of the City Open, so she won't be in the tournament for too long there. But, you know, she is just 15.
That's true.
We've got to realise that, and we've got to give her time to keep growing. And it's no bad thing to lose these matches and just keep learning and getting that experience. And it's possible that she may be getting a wild card into the US Open. And if she does, she'll get an incredible reception. And who knows? She might grow from there, just like she did at Wimbledon. And make her way through the rounds.
Certainly a talent to watch. Just before you go, Uche, Andy Murray, do you think he'll win another Grand Slam?
No.
Right.
I think I tend to agree.
Do you think so?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I think, he's had his moment.
Yeah. Well, at least he had his moment.
He had more than his moment.
I mean, Tim Henman got a heel and never even had a moment, didn't he? Do you know what I mean? It's. I mean, we name a heel after him and never even won.
What'd you do for that heel? You lost.
I think you should take that heel away. Make it a divot.
Henman Bush. Henman Bush. Henman. A little Bush.
Uche, as always, pleasure having you on. Really appreciate your time. No doubt.
Henman Bump.
Henman Bump. Mound. Uche Amarco there, tennis writer for The Express.
For the fans, by the fans. Love Sport Radio.
Listen, John, leadership qualities.
Yes.
Okay. Somebody who's a leader or at the top of the tree are more likely to cheat. Okay.
Well, I can see that, absolutely.
Well, you think it's because they've got power?
Power.
And they think they can do what
yes,
they like. Okay.
Absolutely.
We're joined by a friend of the show. We've had her on before, Rachel Lloyd from eHarmony. Good afternoon, Rachel.
Good afternoon, Rachel.
Hello.
Hello to you, Ray. Now, what's this all about? Do you know what? I can see it. Leadership and people in power, they think they can do anything, don't they? Is that what it is?
Well, there's something very seductive about people in power.
Yes.
And I think it's a combination. I think if you're a leader, a natural born leader, then you're probably charismatic, charming, you know, seductive.
A bit of a Simon Cowell kind of thing.
But he wasn't the first person that came to my mind, but yes. Potentially, I'm sure there are lots of
Who's the first person who came to your mind, Rachel? Who are we talking about?
Ooh.
Spill the beans, Rachel.
Rachel's gone quiet. No, she doesn't need to do that. She doesn't need that. Is it a fact that you think, you know, when you get to the top of the tree, you've got so much power that you can do what you like, and you sort of have we lost her? I think we've lost her.
Have we lost you, Rachel? I wonder why she went quiet. I thought that was a bit rude of Rachel to just...
You know what happened?
To not answer me.
You know what happened? Her husband just caught her. Talking to us.
I think it wasn't. I just wanted to know who she was. She went quiet on me. Oh, dear.
Talking about Simon Cowell. Pull your pants up, Pete.
Yeah.
He's lost quite a bit of weight lately.
Yeah.
And I think the old face is not the real face, is it?
Oh, he thinks he's a little bit of a...
I think there's a bit of plasticine.
A nip and tuck.
Bit of plasticine going in there. and obviously, we met Simon Cowell on a couple of occasions.
Yes.
And he very much liked us.
He did. He did very much so.
Sang at his brother's wedding.
We sang at his brother's wedding. We did all the night. And after the gig, you know, after we went around, weren't we?
Had a good chat.
Having a good chat. Mm. And then they said... We're going on for a boat now. Tell her. Yeah. Well, left us standing there.
Well, he went to Peter Powell's boat.
Peter Powell's boat.
But to be fair, we went...
Oh, but he ain't got a boat now.
We went with Simon Cowell's rest of his guests, and we went and partied in Ibiza, didn't
we? Yes, we did, actually.
Which we had a good night. So it was only Simon went on the boat, and boring.
It was boring. Rachel, are you back?
Do you know what? Where did we get to when you lost me?
Well, I'll tell you exactly where we got to.
We thought we'd lost you because maybe your husband had turned up. So what are you talking to those two for? And
no, I'll tell you where we got to, Rachel. I asked you, and you went quiet on me. I thought you got annoyed with me. I asked you, who was it you were thinking of? Who was the first person you were thinking of and not Simon Cowell?
Okay, well, obviously Simon Cowell is very charismatic, but one of the reasons that we did this research at eHarmony is because we have a new Prime Minister, Boris Johnson, and Mr. Johnson is almost as renowned for his leadership skills, whether you love him or loathe him, you know, he is a very charismatic person, but he's also got quite a colourful love life, which is often... threatened to eclipse his political one.
Yes, well, we can't, you know, speculate on, we can't say he's done or what he hasn't done. Well,
there was a bit of rumours.
There was a bit of an argument in the flat one night.
Well, there was.
Well, we've all been in those intense, passionate. I mean, I know certainly when I was a younger woman, I was in some pretty intense relationships, and as I've mellowed out, they've become less intense and maybe less passionate. But anyway, that's enough of me.
Rachel, you still sound like a young woman. What are you talking about?
Well, what we found was that the good news is, if you're a natural-born leader, you're going to have lots of confidence. Mm. You're going to be, you know, good at sharing opinions and motivating teams. You might be a teacher or a manager or even a prime minister. But you are also 50% more likely to cheat.
Can I ask this as well, though? When you're at the top of the tree in whatever division you're in, if you like, you tend to spend more time away from home in your business. Is that a distraction? Is that, can you, you know, you're in your hotel, you go down to the bar, you're away from home for a couple of weeks, and suddenly you're bumped into, hello, who are you? Does that sort of happen?
I mean, I think there is something to be said for the likelihood or probability, opportunity for cheating might be increased if you're a mover and shaker and you're constantly on and off aeroplanes or in travel lodges, whatever.
Travel lodges.
You know, Alan Partridge moment.
Yes.
So, but I would say that, you know, it comes down to the personality. You know, some people are just more wired to cheat potentially than others. Mm. And there are those of us who are very loyal, and no matter what happens, we have very strong boundaries about being monogamous. Yeah. But it's horses for courses.
Yeah.
But what we did find was that those that are leaders and say that they, you know, have cheated are more likely to blame their partners. So half of leaders...
Why?
They've been driven to it because, well, they might feel unloved by their partner. They might feel a bit insecure, you know, their needs aren't getting met. And about a third of them admit that they literally just couldn't resist. So they were in the travel lodge potentially.
And they saw someone over.
Yeah.
Great, those
travel. Someone over the buffet. That was it.
Do you think it's because, let's say, if they are a leader and they are the head of their company or whatever or something like that, that it's been a lot on their shoulders. They've put all the work in and they probably think the other half is not doing anything and they feel that they're entitled to it.
I guess, I mean, it depends on your moral compass. So you can always find a reason to cheat, can't you? My wife or my husband doesn't understand me. You know, the dog's not been very nice to me. You know, I'm always traveling, I'm lonely, etc.
Yeah.
Mm. And I do, there is definitely something to be said for the probability increasing the more pressure you're under, the more stress that you have. Mm. But as I say, I think some people cheat and some people just don't.
In your research, was this more likely for business leaders or what was the main culprit?
Yeah, we didn't really go for occupations as such. What we did was we did a sort of scientific experiment where we got a large group of people and we sort of scored them on personality traits associated with being strong leaders. And there was about a third of them were shown to have high leadership skills. So they could be anything. They could, as I say, be a teacher, a manager. They might even just be a sort of ordinary office worker, but they would have the ability to inspire a team.
Yeah.
The sort of person that when they walk in a room, probably like you two, they walk in a room and the room stops.
Yeah.
You know, they've got presence.
Yeah.
It certainly does.
People tend to leave.
No, the thing is though, Rachel, I can tell you something, right? I've not got leadership skills at all. I'm terrible like that. But I did, when I used to go to Marbella, I used to put on an act, and I was called Johnny Banuse.
Yeah.
Right? So I'd go...
You have to set the story. We used to sing at a lot of the clubs and the bars in Porta Banuse.
Yeah.
So that was our act.
Wow.
But Johnny would go... once we'd finished the gig, Johnny would walk around Porta Banuse.
I'd walk around Porta Banuse, and all our mates would go, go on, Johnny, do Johnny Banuse. So I'd start doing this character. Right, and I put a big chain on a gold chain. Bill used to give me a chain. And I walk around like this, Rachel, you know what I mean? I'm being a bit powerful,
Like Ray Winston.
I walk around like this. And all of a sudden, a group of people would start following me. Do you remember Follow the Bear? They'd all start following me, mate. They'd all start following me. And this one particular time, loads of people were following me. And this beautiful girl stopped me. Now, and she wouldn't have looked at me twice. But because I had the power, I was like this, you know what I mean? She stopped me and she said, "What? Who are you? Why is everybody following you?"
And I turned around. I'd had a few drinks. And I turned around, Rachel, and I said, so I'll tell you something. I'll tell you what, darling, because I'm very, very powerful. And I walked on.
And she followed you, didn't she?
And she followed us.
Well, there is, you know, you must have some sort of biblical kind of charisma there, you know?
Well, that's what I put on this character.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
It wasn't me.
She actually thought that John was a leader, which is the maddest. And she joined in the fun.
Well, you're both extroverts by the sound of it.
Yes.
You're also very funny. And I have to say, being funny, we found, is like one of the most desired traits. So romantically, you two should do really well.
One of us is.
Just got to ask you, Rachel, why did we do this research?
Yeah.
I ask myself that question every day. No, we did this research because we wanted to look at eHarmony, we're very interested in what makes people tick and how they're wired. And so we look at compatibility when we're matching couples. So it's really important for us to have an understanding of the different type of personalities and their behaviour. And I would say...
Sorry, Rachel, money must have a lot to do with it, surely.
Money, yeah. Well, money is another aphrodisiac, and it obviously makes people very attractive romantically.
Yeah.
Whether that's, you know, a long-term happiness is another matter, but certainly in the moment, it can make people seem very attractive.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately for Johnny, they found out that Johnny Benoist had no money left, and all the people following him suddenly disappeared very quickly by the time he got to the end of the port. Just before you go, Rachel, we've been doing a story on Ben Stokes, the cricketer. Says he doesn't trust the Australians because of the ball tampering. Now, that's another
Ooh.
Hole. Yeah, no, I thought you'd like that one.
I don't know much about ball tampering.
No. Okay, have you ever...
Of course you don't, Rachel.
Rachel, have you ever have you ever cheated at sport? Is there any sport you've cheated at?
I'm probably cheated at pool. They're not the most exciting sport, and maybe right. table tennis.
How did
maybe
you? First of all, Rachel, before you go, how do you cheat at pool and table tennis?
Well, when somebody goes off to the loo or something, say I'll be back in a second.
There you go. That's what Bill
said. Nudge the ball in. Don't
there you go. So there you go, Rachel. Once again, it was ball tampering.
I'm not taking you to the pub.
Oh, balls to this. But thank you very much for having me on the show.
Rachel, as always, fantastic having you on. And
thanks, Rachel. Have a good day.
Really enjoyed that. Rachel Lloyd there, eHarmony.
We like her.
It's a good bit of bantering.
This is Love Sport.
You've been listening to Ben and Sperling. We will sign out. Thank you very much.